taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach a rising generation to be free. You know, I talk a lot about that. I mention it every episode that we need to read and study the Constitution, and that we need to teach the rising generation to be free. Well, to be truthful, we actually need to teach ourselves to be free. Because there is plenty of evidence in the world today that, well, not only do the American people not know how to live free, at least not many, a large percentage of them, but that many of the people that we are hiring and that we are trusting and to protect our freedom, to protect our rights and our liberty, are not at all up to the task. Let's be generous. Let's say that they're not up to the task. I have several articles today that really bring this to fruition. One of them is an interesting article from a top prosecutor in the city of Baltimore who's looking for the Federal Communications Commission to investigate a Fox affiliate because she doesn't like the coverage of her. That's right. Baltimore's top prosecutor requested that the feds investigate a Fox affiliate, apparently for airing a Tucker Carlson Tonight Show that, let's say, was critical of her. Apparently, Baltimore City's state attorney, Marilyn Mosby, has, or at least her office, has accused Fox affiliate WBFF-TV of dishonesty, bias, and racism in a letter to the FCC. Now, Mosby's according to an article I found, Mosby's office argued that language included in the outlet's coverage of the city's attorney is inflammatory against the safety of an elected official, therefore violates federal statute. All right, well, let's start out a little bit. Since she's going to the feds, let's use the feds. We have this little thing called the Constitution of the United States, and in that Constitution, we have this little thing called the Bill of Rights. And in the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of the press. I'm sorry, abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. So unless this Ms. Mosby or her office can prove not simply that it was unflattering to her, but can prove that there was an actual call to violence against her or other elected officials, that's an intimidation. You see, we have this convoluted idea that the federal government has the authority to oversee broadcasting, radio, television, airwaves, because it crosses state lines and there's a lot of issues around that, and I don't want to get into that there. But what we have is an attorney, a state's attorney, that is unhappy with media coverage and therefore is trying to use the power of the federal government to intimidate them. Now, I don't know about you. I don't live in Baltimore. I've been to Baltimore. Never lived in Baltimore. But citizens of the city of Baltimore, really? Is that the best you could come up with? Is it really to the point where, you know, if you disagree with them, and I'm gonna try not to put any assumptions onto what this woman is thinking, but I guess she's claiming that there's an intentional crusade against her, which, given today's politically charged and divisive environment, is extremely dangerous. I wonder, is this the same state's attorney who was she behind the unwillingness to deal with the riots a few years ago in Baltimore? I wonder if this same state's attorney thinks that calling somebody racist in a politically charged and divisive environment is dangerous. But you see, this is what happens when we let political officials act like rulers rather than servants. Now, I'm quite sure there's plenty of coverage that is, let's say, not flattering to Ms. Mosby. Grow up. You are in a public office. There is no time in American history when a political person was not despised by someone. Probably the closest we ever got was George Washington, and even he had his detractors. So grow up. If all you can say is that they were critical of you, and therefore that's dangerous, well, then you need to leave the job because you're not qualified. If you can't take criticism, you don't belong in public office. But you see, this is the quality of people that we are hiring to exercise our sovereign power. I don't know if the state's attorney is an elected position or if it's an appointed position. But if it's an appointed position, she reports to the governor, which is an elected position. Really, Maryland? That's the best you can do. These are the best people you can find to exercise your power. One who decides to go after the media when they don't like what she says. When it gets to a point where it really bothers her. I'm sorry, Ms. Mosby. I have no time for you. You are a waste of space in that office. But you see, that's not the only place. There's a lot of other things that are going on. For example, a New Jersey officer was fired because she posted on Facebook that Black Lives Matter, that many in Black Lives Matter, are terrorists. Yeah. A Hopewell Township police officer, Sarah Irwin's job, was terminated by a unanimous vote. I'm not sure a vote of what? I mean, maybe it was a township? The township leaders? Why? Apparently because she made a point in June of last year during the height of the BLM riots, the looting, the arson, that these people were terrorists. They were terrorizing neighborhoods. But that apparently, you know, you're not allowed to say that if you work for New Jersey government. Now, again, I don't have all the details. I haven't talked to all sides, but it certainly doesn't look good that a police officer looking at criminal activity by people who are terrorizing neighborhoods actually calls out that they are terrorists. She said in this report, in this article, she said, quote, I had friends, family, tons of people reaching out, text messages, phone calls, reaching out through Messenger, checking on me and making sure everything was okay because they were seeing so many things in the news. I felt it was easiest to put what I was feeling and get a message out was that I was home and I was safe. So apparently she was. Letting friends and family know, yeah, I'm okay. But she was worried about other officers and the fact that they're dealing with people who are terrorizing neighborhoods. But you see, we've become so racially focused, so racist. Let me ask you, if a MAGA group was rioting and looting and arson, committing arson, and someone referred to them as a terrorist organization, would they be fired? because I don't seem to remember anybody getting fired when they called the people who entered the Capitol illegally were called terrorists, insurgents. I don't seem to remember anybody getting fired over that. Is this what America has devolved to? That now it's no longer do you have rights, no longer do you have, does truth matter? Everything has to be politically allowable. And apparently, you're not allowed to criticize BLM in certain cities and certain states in this country. Now, here's a flip side. So what we have is we have a state's attorney trying to get an investigation into a television station because she didn't like the coverage. We have a law enforcement officer fired for pointing out when terrorists are running rampant in her streets. And we come back to the media. Now, I'm sure everyone here is aware that a search warrant was served on Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of New York City, lawyer for President Trump, and his house was searched. Okay. What's interesting is several news outlets, including the Washington Post, and New York Times, and NBC News, were put forth a false story that Giuliani had been warned that some of the people he was dealing with were potential Russian agents or foreign agents. Oh my God, all this news goes out. Oh, Giuliani was warned that the people he were dealing with were foreign actors and oh my word, this is terrible. And then we find out, nothing happened. It never happened. These are called defensive briefings. And these places claim, these quote-unquote news outlets, these propaganda outlets claimed that Giuliani received a defensive briefing about Russian disinformation from the FBI. That was a lie. No sugarcoating. That was a lie. That was false. And they go, oh, I'm sorry, my bad. Now, here's the interesting question. First of all, did these supposedly news outlets, these propaganda mouthpieces, actually announce their correction in anything like the area, the volume, the spread of their lie? Now, apparently, the Washington Post, they actually put in at the top of their article, they put a correction that said, nope. So you have the article, and then days later, after it's been read by how many millions of people, I guess the Washington Post, maybe it's hundreds of people. I'm sorry, I don't. Then they go, oh, by the way, there's a correction on top. Have you ever heard the saying that bad news will travel the world before good news gets its pants on? Simply putting a correction on top of that article does not have nearly the impact of the lie they told. Now, whether they did it because they were misinformed or they did it for malicious reasons, they lied to the American people. So they said, well, we'll put up a correction. We'll say, oh, an earlier version of the story published before Thursday incorrectly reported that One America News was warned by the FBI that it was a target of Russian influencing. What good is that after millions of people have read this? The NBC News, they also did a correction, and okay, if they put it in the same time slot, they gave it the same amount of time. They did their best to correct the misinformation. I give them credit for that. I personally would have preferred they vetted information first, but I wonder how many people saw the original article versus how many people saw the correction. By far the worst of these are the New York Times, the old gray lady, which I would not use to line a birdcage, because they buried their correction at the end of the article. So only after you've read the lies and misinformation do they get to the bottom and say, oh, by the way, yeah, it's a lie. And people wonder why they don't trust the news media anymore, because they're not news. They're propaganda. And there's more. Oh, yeah, of course there's more. So an article in The Federalist. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott calls a reporter's question on outdoor mask mandates reckless. So apparently during some sort of press conference, a reporter asked a question about outdoor mask mandates. You see, during this outdoor briefing, the mayor took off his mask in violation of his own mask at all times policy, tyrannical nonsense. And of course, you start looking at the evidence, and the evidence for masks is questionable at best, outdoor masks even more so. But then Scott declared it reckless for anyone to be talking about or asking about mandates. Really? It's reckless to question our public servants if they're following anything rational or logical? It's reckless? The only thing reckless, sir, is allowing you to run amok, violate the rights and liberties of your citizens, violate the Constitution of Maryland, violate the Constitution of the United States, violate the laws of Maryland and the United States, and be allowed to get away with it. The only thing reckless right now is the fact that you still have your job. Oh, he says, we're going to continue to follow guidance we get from Dr. D. I have no idea. I guess that's probably their health commissioner. Well, guess what? That's not good enough. Everything you do in public office is open for question. That's the purpose. That's what we call a republic. We hire you to do a job. We get to question everything you do. And if you don't like it, sir, find another job. I am sick and tired of these politicians that can't take criticism. How dare you contradict what your lords on high say? Well, that, I'm sorry, Mr. Scott. I don't care. Now, granted, I don't live in your city. I would never live in the cesspool that you run the government of. But the idea that people cannot ask questions about policy is tyrannical. It is the worst form of dictatorship. And people, the citizens of the city of Baltimore, you hired this guy. Why? Why does he still have a job? Why does he get to tell you what you can and cannot question of his policies? I thought this was self-government. I thought it was we, the people. But you see, he doesn't want that. He apparently doesn't want that. He doesn't want his orders questioned. He's a petty tyrant, a petty dictator. He is not only an example of the slavery, the serfdom, the utter servitude of the citizens of Baltimore. See, it's not simply that he is a tyrant, it's the fact that people have hired him and continue to let him serve. Why are the people of Baltimore not going up and questioning? How dare you call it reckless to question you? You work for us, not the other way around. Don't see any of that. Do you want to know why Mr. Scott gets away with this? Because we, the people, have let him. We have stopped treating those in government as our employees. We treat them as our rulers. And it disgusts me. Now, I'm not saying we should commit acts of violence, but excuse me, Mr. Scott, haven't you just shown yourself unqualified for office? Why do the people of the city of Baltimore continue to put up with you? Why don't they fire a feckless employee who is unwilling to have his job critiqued? Ask me, citizens of Baltimore, tell me one job where your bosses are not allowed to critique your work. People critique my work all the time. They always have. How come when you sit in office, at least in a Democratic office, if you happen to be in a Democratic party in some of these cities, your job review is not allowed? Why do we put up with this? I'll tell you why. I'll give you a sneak peek as to why. See, part of the reason is we don't know what our rights are. We don't understand how government was designed to work. We don't understand what the laws are. John Jay said every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. Most Americans can't be bothered. For whatever excuse they have, they cannot be bothered. Now, why did John Jay say we should read and study the Constitution? Knowing our rights, we will sooner perceive when they are violated and be better prepared to defend and assert them. I look at this and see this as a violation. I see all of these stories. The Baltimore prosecutor, the New Jersey law enforcement officer, the Rudy Giuliani, and now the Baltimore mayor. These all happened because our rights were violated. And in many cases, people didn't even recognize that they were violated. So I'm putting together something. I'm putting together what I'm calling the Knowing Your Rights Tour. Head to constitutionstudy.com/tour and you can get some more updates. But I'm going to be going through, looks like right now I'm going mostly through the Midwest. I would love to join other cities. And I'm going to teach people about how to know their rights, how to recognize when they're violated, and how to defend and assert them. So if you want to find out if I'm coming to a city near you, again, head to constitutionstudy.com/tour. I will keep that up to date. If you would like me to come visit your city and help teach you and your neighbors how to know your rights, how to defend and assert them, there's a form at the bottom of that page you can fill out, and we'll see if we can make it happen. But we need to start. I've been harping on this idea that we need to start locally. And notice, Baltimore. Baltimore has a problem. You have a mayor that doesn't want to be challenged. You have a prosecutor that doesn't like when her name, when her work is critiqued in a way she doesn't like. Baltimore, your citizens need to know your rights. You need to read and study the Constitution. And I can help. And I have tools to help. So yeah, head to constitutionstudy.com. You can find out more. I have this neat little book called How to Read the Constitution in 30 Days. I say I do it in 30 days because most people don't believe me that you can do it in 30 minutes. And it's a daily devotion. 2 minutes a day. Give me 2 minutes a day. And in 1 month, you've read the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. You read a little bit. There's a little commentary I throw in. There's a little highlight I put in. It's easy. You don't have time to read it. You're on the road. I'm working on an audiobook. If you'd be interested in an audiobook, let me know. I've been putting one together. That's been a lot of fun. But also, please head to constitutionscholars.com. That's where you can find others in your state, in your region, that are just as interested in becoming students of the Constitution, reading it, studying it, getting to know their rights, and learning how to defend and assert them. And please, share this program. Go to AmericaOutloud.com, look for the Constitution Study, share it with friends and family. Let them know. If you can't listen to this program live, usually a day or two later, these programs go up on a podcast. All of my shows. So you can listen to me whenever you want. You can listen on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart, pretty much anywhere you get your podcast, you can hear the Constitution Study. You can head to the website, AmericaOutloud.com, search under shows for Constitution Study. They're all posted there as well. Help us read and study the Constitution and teach the rising generation to be free. So stick with me, and we'll be right back after this short break.
As we celebrate our five-year anniversary, America Out Loud has expanded its mission through a newly designed website with a host of new contributors, all carrying a vibrant message of hope and survival for this country we love. AmericaOutloud.com. Together, we'll secure the future for generations to come.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. Thank you for joining me at the Constitution Study. You know, I've been talking about the, our elected officials that are unwilling to be criticized, unwilling to be questioned, unwilling for difficult truths to come out. But there's more going on out there. There's a lot more. For example, the District of Columbia's Attorney General wants to seal the arrest records for certain protesters. That's right. Washington, D.C. Attorney General Carl Ricine, he's offered to seal the arrest records of more than 200 people for violating a curfew during protests. Now, let's see. Could this be the protests of malfeasance and issues during the election? No, I don't think it was those protests that he's offering to seal. No. Those people are languishing in jail. No, that's not it. Let's see, what else could it be? Could it be the people that protested, I don't know, cherry blossoms? No, it wasn't that. No, it's the people that protested in the wake of George Floyd's murder. Yeah, see, if you are of the right political group, and if you're protesting the right political thing, well, then Attorney General Racine's more than happy to seal your record. And not simply, he's actually, apparently his office sent letters to 220 protesters who violated a curfew. Now, is he doing it because the curfew was illegal? No, I don't think that's it. No, he sent them letters and said, listen, if they responded, he would seal their records. Why? Well, you see, they declined to prosecute those protesters. Again, was the curfew legal? If the curfew was legal and they violated it, why are they declining to prosecute? Well, maybe they've got bigger fish to fry. I would give it Washington, D.C. is pretty much a cesspool, so there's probably more important things for the prosecutor's office in the District of Columbia to deal with than curfew violators. I could understand that. But then to go and offer to seal their records, I'm sorry, this stinks of a political move. This, you get to violate, you know, if you're protesting for a reason we like, well, then we're not going to prosecute you. We'll even offer to seal your records. And they're not simply saying, well, we'd be willing to if someone asked. They actually reached out to these protesters and asked them. They offered. They didn't simply say, okay, if you ask for it, we'll do it. They offered to do it for them. Now, let me ask you, Mr. Racine, are you offering to seal the records of those who protested during on January 6th? Are you? I don't think so. If you are, please let me know. Contact the show. I'll be more than happy to issue a correction. In fact, I'll go so far as to put it in the same time slot and give you just as much airtime. But to date, I haven't seen anything about you offering to seal the records of those who peacefully protested the election of a president in violation of the Constitution. Paul, you're not allowed to say that, except it's the truth. Several states chose a manner of selecting electors contrary to what the legislature said. Therefore, those electors were illegitimately appointed. Their vote should not have been counted. And the people have a right to peaceably assemble and to petition their government for a redress of grievance. And since Washington, D.C. is a federal city, it falls under the First Amendment. It falls under the U.S. Constitution, the First Amendment, because Washington, D.C. is legislated by Congress. Congress oversees Washington, D.C. So, yeah, I want to, if you were at the January 6th protest, I want you to reach out to Attorney General Racine's office, say, wait, why didn't you offer to seal my records? That is unequal treatment under the law. Either you offer to seal the records of every peaceful protester, or you offer to do none of them. Now, do I expect Mr. Racine to change his mind? Nah. Why? Because no one holds him accountable. Because the people in Washington, D.C. are more than happy to allow their side to get away with breaking the law and pillorying their political opposition. Now, why do I pick on the January 6th breach, quote-unquote, breach? Well, because I find something very interesting. You know, we've heard stories all last summer about riots and looting and arson and assault and in some cases murder, and the police were ordered to stand back. So when the Inspector General of the Capitol Police tells lawmakers that the response to the Capitol breach on January 6th was obstructed by a senior official who instructed them not to use the best weapons due to a lack of training, that tells me that the Capitol Police were not prepared, they were woefully unprepared, or their leadership was derelict in letting this happen. See, in an Epoch Times article, quoting Michael A. Bolton, the Inspector General for the U.S. Capitol Police, told a House committee on April 15th that officers were ordered not to use heavy non-lethal munitions to repel attack as if feared they would be misused and potentially cause life-altering injury or death. Okay. If the Capitol Police were not prepared, if they were not trained to use this equipment, why did they have it? And if this was so terrifying that Alicia Ocasio-Cortez, who wasn't even in the Capitol at that time, was cowering under her desk. If Nancy Pelosi wants this investigated as if the same way they investigated 9/11, if it was that bad, it was that dangerous, why were the officers told to hold their fire. I understand, you know, if they weren't trained, that's bad. But if they're really so dangerous, if the people who entered the Capitol were so dangerous that lawmakers were quaking in their boots, why was probably more termed less than lethal ammunition not allowed? If there was an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury to the lawmakers, why not use non-lethal weapons because they might cause a life-altering injury or death? Now, trust me, I appreciate the restraint shown. But I'm having a hard time reconciling the vision of the police and the fact that this is not dangerous enough, it does not warrant that level of response to use sting balls, stun grenades. If they weren't deemed that dangerous, why are these people being pilloried by the elected officials in Washington? Why are many of them not eligible for bail, not allowed out? Why are they suffering in jail, awaiting their day in court, when others in D.C. and in other cities who are caught on video looting and burning allowed to go free? See, my problem isn't so much with the restraint the Capitol Police were ordered to show. It's the disparate treatment of people based on their political agenda. So, yeah, if you are protesting George Floyd, you get a pass, you get your record sealed. If you are protesting a corrupted election, go to jail, do not pass go, do not collect $200, and rot there until we get around to your day in court. Now, I've been talking about a lot of political officials today, and let's take a little bit of a slight detour. Let's look at some. And I found this interesting article from The Federalist talking about California legislation that would require the disclosure of the names and addresses of those who signed the petitions to recall Governor Newsom, that those be made public. So here you have a bill in the California Senate passed by a 4-1 vote, again, along party lines, saying, if you dared to question El Jefe Newsom, if you dared to put your name on paper to say, you know what, maybe we should vote, see if we want to recall this dude, they want to dox you. They want that information made public. And why is it only the Democrats that were asking for this? Well, because Governor Newsom is a Democrat. In a government in California full of Democrats, the Senate Elections Committee voted 4-1 to do this. Now, why, pray tell, do you think these names should be made public? Do you think it's so they can throw ticker tape parades? Nah, I don't think it's just throw ticker tape parades for these people. I honestly believe it's so that these people can be harassed and intimidated, because that is the history. That is, we've seen it over and over and over again. When you stand up against bureaucracy, when you stand up against bad government, when you dare to open your mouth and say this is wrong, there are those who will destroy you, and not just those in government. Their cohorts, the Marxists, the tyrants, the despotic groups will harass, will harangue, will make these people's lives a living hell for having the temerity to say, you know what, we don't think the governor's doing a very good job. California's not a free state. This is the nonsense they pull in Venezuela, in Cuba, in Vietnam. This is what you expect from Iran. Not within the United States. And if you're telling me that a simple majority of elected officials can out people who are questioning the legitimacy, the viability, the ethic of an elected official. You know what? I have a much better idea. I'd like to know the names of these four out of five. Now, State Senator Jim Nielsen was the lone Republican who dissented. You know what? If you want to have these people's names public, why don't you make your home address and phone number, the names of your spouses and your children? Why don't you make them public? I'm sure you're not going to do that, or at least control that as much as possible, because you don't want that nonsense. But you're more than willing to have people who disagree with you politically outed and exposed because they didn't follow Dear Leader. Do we need to change the governor's name to Kim John Newsom? This is the act. This is the stuff that happens in despotic countries. Has California become their own despotic country? And as if that wasn't bad enough, guess what? All those big businesses that were all bent out of shape on what was going on in Georgia, and oh, by the way, you dared to try and make your thing, your elections harder to cheat. Oh, you know what? They got no problem with California government intimidating citizens who disagree with them. I haven't heard Major League Baseball complain. I haven't heard Coca-Cola complain. I haven't heard Delta Airlines, United Airlines. I haven't heard them complain about voter intimidation in California being done by the government of California. They don't care about that because it's a Democrat doing it. So only when it's the Republicans, or only when it prevents them from cheating, only then do they complain. And of course, I pick on Major League Baseball because they deserve it, and Coca-Cola and all the others. And of course, it's all this whining and crying. There's all this hoopla about Facebook. Well, you know what was very interesting? Do you remember when the New York Post, maybe you don't follow the news like I have to, but New York Post did a story that criticized the co-founder, of Black Lives Matter. Patrice Cullors, for a real estate spending spree. And the New York Post said, you know, really, if you're the head of an organization like this, is that really we should be, you know, spending your money? And trust me, I've heard a lot of people call out the hypocrisy. You know, they find it interesting that a Marxist, a self-avowed Marxist, is taking money and spending it on their own lavish lifestyle, which to me is utterly laughable. Take a look at any socialist, any truly socialist Marxist regime, and you find the leaders are getting rich while everyone else is getting poor. So New York Post writes their little article, and that's great. Except what does Facebook do? Facebook blocks the post. See, they don't want their loyal dominions, their loyal servants, to read an article critical of a group they happen to like. Just why do you trust BLM? Why do you trust Facebook? Why do we trust any of these people? How can you trust, when you go to your Facebook newsfeed, how can you trust that you're getting the information they told you were going to get? Most people do because they don't know. They are living in a bubble of misinformation provided by a small, relatively small group of people, so they don't realize they're being lied to. Sure, it's a lie of omission, not a lie of commission, but it's still a lie. They have no problem with that. This is not the first time big tech, including Facebook, has blocked stories they don't like. My site was shut down. My page was shut. My account was disabled. And they never told me why. Oh, they said some claim about violating some standard, or they never told me what I did. They never told me the false information. They never did. But you see, I had this nasty habit of informing the American people about presidential elections and how they work constitutionally. And apparently that was the last thing that Facebook wanted its readers to know about. And of course, you're going to pick on Facebook. You got to pick on Twitter as well, right? Twitter has censored information about Hunter Biden because they claimed that information was hacked. And they have a policy against sharing hacked information. Forget the fact that it wasn't hacked. That apparently Hunter Biden handed his laptop to a service company, signed a receipt saying he had done so, and then left it there. And after the appropriate and legal amount of time, the owner of that location looked at it and saw the garbage that was on there and turned it over to law enforcement. But you see, that was hacked. That Twitter couldn't let that go out. That was terrible. However, allowing people to, sharing the names of people who donated to a legal fund for someone accused of killing protesters in Wisconsin last summer. Oh, no, we can dox them. We won't put out information that wasn't hacked, but we'll claim that, you know, it wasn't that the information was hacked. And it's really kind of weird. Twitter says the content didn't violate their distribution of hacked materials policy because it doesn't directly link to the hacked information. Excuse me? See, they say, well, you know, this, they're willing to ban under a hack information policy information that wasn't hacked. Now, there have been plenty of examples. In fact, I've read this in the Tennessee Star, of Twitter putting out information directly from hackers, received directly from hackers. But again, it apparently, you know, it's only for certain people. Hacked in for, you know, allegedly, falsely assumed to be hacked information about Hunter Biden. No, we can't allow that because that might hurt our leader. That might hurt the election opportunities for the Democrat. We can't have that. But someone, a young man accused of killing protesters. Oh yeah, have away. Put anything out you want. We don't care. Now, I'm sure there are people out there that are screaming at their radio or in their calling says, yeah, we need to break up Facebook. We need to do something to Twitter. We need to do something. Government needs to do something. No, government doesn't. Actually, there is one thing government needs to do. See, government needs to rescind parts of section. They need to rewrite section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. For one very simple reason. This has nothing to do with Facebook or Twitter. It has nothing to do with what articles they're doing. It's very simple. See, Congress, by allowing companies to avoid prosecution for anything they deem to be questionable, has denied the people of the United States the ability to petition their government for a redress of grievance. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a violation of the First Amendment. Remember that pesky little First Amendment? It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievance. That is exactly what Section 230, as it's currently written, does. Because it doesn't say, okay, you can't, you know, if they wanted to do this right, if they wanted to be legal, constitutional, if you wanted to say, yes, you can't sue a company for taking down material they reasonably believe to be illegal, I could almost get away with that. You know, a lot of this came through because of some young man committed suicide live on Facebook. And boy, we wanted to do something about that. But by saying these companies have discretion over anything they believe might be offensive, and then shield them from prosecution for those actions, is a law that Congress has made that denies the ability to petition the government for redress of grievance. When you sue someone in court, that is a government agency. Court, the judicial branch is part of the government. If you're saying, I can't look for a redress of my grievance from the government because these are now a preferred people, you violated the First Amendment. I'd love to see someone bring that challenge up. Then again, they'd be bringing it to the government. So I don't really know that I would expect the courts, the federal courts, to actually uphold that issue, to say that, no, you can't deny people the right to petition a government for redress of grievance. Because just think of how many ways government has protected groups from prosecution, from suit. Sure, you've got big tech. We've been talking about that. Guess what? All those vaccine manufacturers, the government has claimed they have immunity. If you have an adverse reaction, if you think they've done something wrong, you cannot sue these vaccine manufacturers, COVID-19 vaccine manufacturers. Well, that's a denial of the right to petition for a redress of grievance. And again, this is nothing new. Way back in 1776, one of the grievances why we separated is because the king protected them, in this case the military, by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should have committed on the inhabitants of these states. Okay, well, again, we're not talking about people committing murder, but we are talking about people potentially causing harm. Granted, it's not murder, but potentially causing harm, and they're being, in this case, not even given a mock trial. They're not even allowed to go to court. This is why we have that part of the First Amendment, so that your right to petition the government is not denied. That's exactly what's happening today. That's exactly what's been happening for decades. And it's about time we stop letting it happen. I don't think we should get rid of Section 230. I think we should simply modify it to say that you cannot, that section of two, part of Section 230, that you cannot sue a company for removing content they reasonably believe to be illegal. So if they want to take down a post that is inciting riot, okay, I have no problem with that. If they want to take down a post for, who knows, child trafficking, drug trafficking, whatever. I could probably accept that. But to simply say, listen, if you don't find it offensive, you get to get rid of it, and you can't be sued for that. That is a violation of the Constitution. That is a violation of the First Amendment, and I want to start seeing people stand up for that. Now, if you want to find out more, again, please head to my website, constitutionstudy.com. Check out the book. If you sign up, I mentioned this book earlier. If you sign up for the newsletter, if you just request it, I will give you a digital copy of the Constitution Study. Simply go to the website, look on the right-hand side. You'll see the newsletter. You'll see the book. If you sign up for the newsletter or you just request the book, I will give you free a digital copy of How to Read the Constitution in 30 Days. Please read it. Please read it with your family. Read it with friends. Be involved. Stop being a passive agent in the operation of your government. Become engaged. As Thomas Jefferson said, I know no safe depository of the ultimate power of the society, but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is a true corrective of abuses of constitutional power. That's what I want to do. That's what the Constitution study is all about. It is about seeing where the people are not enlightened enough, where they don't know enough. You know, there's no crime in not knowing unless you fail to do something about it. So please head to the website, constitutionstudy.com, find out more, get engaged. And again, you know, be sure to make sure that you check out America Out Loud. Make it your daily stop for news and happenings. See, it's important that we all do our part, that we all participate. So do things. Share the stories. Share the articles. Share the podcasts and videos. Every week I do an in-depth article on some constitutional issue, and they're posted there as well. And again, not just mine, but my other America Out Loud hosts, we all are providing useful information for you. But it's not enough for you to simply read it or listen to it or watch it. We really need to share it. You know, it wasn't the fact that Thomas Paine wrote Common Sense that inspired the nation. It was the fact that that book was not simply printed, it was shared. It was shared with others. It encouraged them, it enlightened them, and emboldened them to fight for independence. So let's do that here today in the 21st century. And then come back and join me next time right here at the Constitution Study.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day.